Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
We are here with this week's episode of Inside Jag Nation, the weekly podcast of the University of South Alabama Department of Athletics. I'm Associate Athletic Director Brian Freeman, and with me for this week's episode is Head Softball Coach Becky Clark. Coach, morning. Thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, I love it. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, a few of the things we wanted to touch on is about the fall season, where you just completed a stretch where you faced outside competition during four different weekends. What would you say that you learned about your team during that period going against other schools?
Well, I don't know that I would say like what I learned about them. I think what we learned about ourselves. You know, I think that like this year, same as last year, we have a large number of new people. So it's a time of us trying to all get on the same page, trying to install our system, both on the offensive side and the defensive side of it, and just trying to get used to working with each other. You know, I think, too, just kind of understanding the expectations that we have for our program and what that looks like, and being able to do that part of it from a mental and a physical standpoint on a daily basis. So I would say just overall, kind of running around a little bit, but just overall, I would say just learning how to do it every day, learning how to show up every day. You know, and the outside competition just gives you an opportunity to do that and see how well you're doing that.
Well, I think what some people may not realize, especially if they haven't stopped by, is that when you face outside competition in the fall, it's not a traditional seven-inning game for the most part. You guys set it up where there's definitely some specific situational work that you get involved in. How are the decisions made in terms of what situations you work on? Do you make them in advance? Do you decide them talking to the coach when you guys come out to the field? And do certain situations depend on the actual opponent that's at the field that day?
Well, I did something a little bit different this year, where in the past we've done a lot of situational work, and this year, instead of situational, we wanted to turn it more into just straight competition for our kids. And so because we do play a few extra innings, we kind of would turn that into, like, if it was an eight-inning game, then we would make that like a four-inning game for one group, and then run another group out there and have another four-inning game. So basically kind of like a doubleheader. If we went a little bit more than that, then we would divide it up into like three, three, and three, and that way each group has a three-inning, air quote, game. So they can kind of – it gives them a chance to go out and compete and see if they win their three innings or win their four innings and then reset the scoreboard. Obviously, we wouldn't pause the game, but we would reset the board, and then that next group would go out and have to try to win their part. Just to try to help from the competitive standpoint, and it gives it a little bit more life, a little bit more energy than just kind of, you know, hey, we're setting up first and third every time or something like that.
You know, knowing that wins and losses don't necessarily matter and it's not the traditional seven-inning game, how do you go about afterward evaluating the performance at the end of each weekend?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just, number one, looking and seeing, like, who's competing. Who's competing and who's taking the information that they've been given and doing something with it. You know, I think overall, and that was why we kind of set it up the way we did this time, was just from the competitive aspect. There's a lot of things that we haven't talked about yet or covered yet, but you can always compete. You can always have energy, and that's something that, you know, we're always evaluating. And then I think, too, just the stuff that we've covered, the stuff that we've talked about, who's taking that and putting it into the game. So I think for me, those are the biggest parts. On the mental side of it, who's doing the mental work, and who's doing the mental work on a consistent basis is huge for me. So, you know, I think the key and the challenge for the fall is you have your new people and you have your returners. And so it's acclimating the new people and trying to integrate them into what you're doing and challenging your returners at the same time. So that's always kind of a challenge. And I think that's where, when you're looking at who's competing, like, you can always do that. You know, who's executing, who's taking the information and executing the information they've been given. You can always do that. And, you know, all that's going to be relative based on the experience that you have coming into it. And so, you know, we try to keep that in mind as well, that understand that some people aren't going to, it's not going to click yet for some people, and for others, this is, you know, old stuff. So, I think overall, just looking at those factors.
So you don't just come out on the weekend and see another team. You also, you're doing work throughout the week. Talk to us about comparing setting up a fall practice during the week versus setting up a practice in the spring early in the week leading up to, like, say, a weekend tournament. Is it similar, different? How do you go about it?
Well, I mean, in the fall, it's a lot more fundamental work. And like I said, installing, like, offenses and defenses, that type of stuff. The spring, you get much more specific because you're preparing for a specific opponent. So, you know, right now, everything is general. It's teaching the game. It's giving them, hey, these are the different defenses. These are the different plays. Like, this is what we're trying to do offensively. This is what we're doing on the mound. And then once you get into your spring season, you're looking at your specific opponent and you're looking at matchups and you're trying to figure out, this is what they're doing, this is how we're going to counter it, that type of thing. So I would say it's just a general to specific kind of thing. You know, this is kind of our spring training, if to use a major league thing analogy. It's our spring training where we're figuring out where everybody's supposed to be and, you know, our communication system, all that kind of stuff. And then after that, you know, in the spring, it's this is how we're going to specifically attack this team.
You know, you brought it up that it's a little bit different for kids coming back versus the kids who are here for the first time. But does previous performance and experience factor into how you plan for what you want returning players to do during the fall season?
Well, I think for me, I've always kind of hit the reset button in the fall from the standpoint of every position is wide open and everyone has the same opportunity to get on the field and earn a spot. So that goes for our walk-ons, that goes all the way up to our scholarship kids. So, you know, does the prior experience help you with that? Yes, it should, if you allow it to, but that's not kind of, it's not a given. So, you know, I think for us, just the competition part of it, of understanding, like, if I want a spot on the field, like I'm going to have to get a job done every single day. I think that's an amazing part of playing Division I softball, is it brings out the best in you. And I think just like this year, I think we have great competition. I've expanded our roster. That's something in the past I've had a smaller roster, and this year kind of open it up a little bit to create more competition. I think that has been a great adjustment on our part because I have seen a lot more competition with our kids. And, you know, I always say this, we live in a world of competition. Like, that's what we do for a living. Everything about what we do is competition. So to be able to create that for our kids and for them to understand that that's a good thing, that's a great thing. I think to be successful at this level, you have to love that part of it. You have to love that challenge. You have to love that, like, every single day I know I'm going to have to show up mentally. I'm going to have to show up physically. I can't take days off. I can't take reps off, can't take pitches off. You know, that's why you play at this level. That's why you play Division I, because you want that challenge. So, you know, I think all in all, like, that's kind of who we are, what we're trying to do.
In the fall season, you find that you experiment a lot, putting kids in different positions in the field and in the batting lineups you're running out on the weekend, putting them in different spots, or you prefer a little bit of consistency in the positions you put the kids in so that you're able to use it for evaluation purposes?
A little bit of both. I think this year I've gotten more, last year and this year I've gone a little bit more toward, you know, competing for a spot in the fall. Everyone played in the fall, but as I saw people doing certain things, those people kind of moved to the front of the line. You know, trying to give them, here's a reward for your hard work. Here's a reward for, you know, locking in and buying into what we're asking you to do. And for the fact that you're getting results on the field. I mean, you know, as much as we don't want to talk about results, you know, we talk about process, process, process. It's Division I. I mean, the results do matter. I think it's such a, you know, that's what makes our job so hard, is you have to lock into the process of getting results. But at the end of the day, you know, you're going to be on the field because you're getting results at this level. So, you know, I think just kind of overall, like, looking at who's having quality at-bats, who's having great at-bats, who's getting the job done on the mound, who's, you know, defensively getting the job done, who's locked in, who's mentally like working, you know, and rewarding those kids. And so I think you try to get everyone playing time. You try to let everybody give you a chance to say, hey, this is what I can do. You know, you definitely try to say, okay, here's your primary position. We're going to get you work there. We're also going to get you work at your secondary position, some of them at a third position. So, you know, trying to kind of at least let them see different looks and all that, because you never know what's going to happen in the spring. I mean, this is a game of if you're hitting, then we're going to try to find a place for you. So, you know, that's not a bad thing if you're playing two or three different positions. That's me going, looking forward to the spring and going, okay, this, you know, she's going to hit, so we're going to have to be able to get her in the lineup. Dayla Gulledge is a good example of that. You know, I mean, she has a lot of power at the plate. She's a catcher. I've asked her to get work in right field this year because, you know, we're just where are we going to get all of our sticks in the lineup? So it just opens up another opportunity for her. And, you know, we do that across the board with a lot of them.
For the newcomers who showed up this semester, how much does facing outside competition in the fall prepare them for the spring? Or is there a fact that you're going to expect they're still going to have to learn and make adjustments those first few weekends in February when you get into those opening tournaments?
Well, our goal, first of all, the outside competition is huge. But then our goal is, and this is our goal every fall, is to close that gap as quickly as we can. And that's what I tell them. Like, you know, if you're new and you're trying to figure things out, like, we have to get that gap closed before we get to February. You know, I would like to think that hopefully we're not a program that's going, okay, well, we'll take February and half of March to get rolling, and as long as we're ready by conference, you know, then we're okay. I mean, with RPI these days, you can't really do that. I mean, with RPI, it's your body of work, and, I mean, that very first game, you better be ready to go because it's just not very forgiving. So there's such a small margin for error that I just don't think that the days of – you know, it's early, you know, and we've got February to kind of get things going. I just don't think that happens anymore. So there's a sense of urgency on our part in the fall to get all of this as far along as we possibly can, because when we get back in the spring, we don't want to have to be trying to figure those types of things out. We want to be ready. We want to be trying to get game ready as quickly as possible.
So when you get done with the fall, not just the outside competition, but you still got over a month of workouts as well. How much does fall performance factor into projecting a lineup when you head into the start of practice at the spring semester?
Oh, it's huge for us. I mean, I use the fall, and I mean, I put a lot of weight on the fall and put a lot of weight on what kids are doing. And I mean, they're always like, this is the way I look at it. You can't control success, but you can control putting yourself in a position to be successful. And so, like, as I'm looking at our kids on the field and watching them in practice, like, I'm basically looking at who is putting themselves in a position to be successful, who's putting themselves in a position to help our team be successful. And so I think all of that work, everything they're doing right now, is an investment. And I tell them this, like, you know, think about having a piggy bank on your dresser at home. You can't take money out that you don't put into it. And so when we get to the spring and we start writing checks, we can't write checks on an account that we haven't put money into, we haven't deposited. So, you know, this is our time to invest, because once we get to the spring, I mean, that's when all of that's going to pay off. So it really kind of comes down to what are you putting into it? You know, and like you said, we've got another month to go, and it's kind of easy. Everybody's like, oh, well, your fall's over. I'm like, our fall is not over. You know, these next 4 weeks are huge for us. We've still got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of work to do in the weight room. We've got a lot of work to do on the softball field. So, you know, for us, we're not sitting there going, okay, well, now it's over. We're still full go right now.
Perfect lead into the next question, actually, Coach. I appreciate that. But I was going to ask you about the strength and conditioning program and how you handle that in the fall, kind of how you, if you were able to determine, not necessarily percentages, but how do you split time between the weight room and conditioning versus practice during the fall season?
Yeah, and it gets tough because, you know, we are going so much out here on the field. Right now we lift 3 days a week, so we're Tuesday and Thursday mornings and then Sunday afternoons, and then also, like, getting our conditioning in as well. You know, the weight room plays a huge role in what we're doing. Once again, I'll go back to my piggy bank analogy. like you're going to play in the spring on the muscle that you built in the previous summer and previous fall. So, you know, I think that part of it is big. I mean, that's where the wear and tear of our season is. As you go through the spring and these pitchers are throwing so many innings and you've got catchers behind the plate and you've got, you know, a shortstop standing out there for rep after rep and they're on their feet and they're in the gruel and the grind of what they do. If they don't have the base in the weight room, then, you know, that's obviously a negative factor. So that part of it is huge for us and something that we are constantly on top of and monitoring because we do feel like that's such a major part of what of our success.
You know, with these next 4 weeks where you continue to work with, you know, limited practice hours, how do you set that up? Is it about working on situations and preparing for the fall, or do you go back and look at some of the things that you saw happen against outside competition and sort of address it? How do you plan for what you work on the next 4 weeks?
Well, I think as a coach and a coaching staff, you're always looking at, like, that group and what that group needs. You know, teams are like snowflakes. No two are the same. And so you can't just say, hey, here's my template, and every single time this is what I'm going to do. There's a lot of evaluation on our part as a staff on where are we. And, you know, just going into these next 4 weeks, today is actually a day where we kind of will sit down with them individually and say, hey, over the next 4 weeks, this is what we see you really need to be working on. Like, this is the good, and this is the next step forward for you. So trying to define that for them. You know, we've had some pitchers who've been haven't been able to throw a lot of live because they've been hurt. So we've got those kids that are now kind of coming back and trying to get in the rotation. So we'll have a lot of live work because those pitchers will need to be throwing. They still have a lot to figure out. Still have hitters who, you know, need to be getting their reps and getting some work in. You know, along with the work in the weight room and trying to get a little bit quicker. But a lot of right now is me telling kids specifically, like, this is where you are right now, and over the next month, like, this is the next step forward for you and what you need to be doing specifically.
Yeah, now that you're done with outside competition in the fall and you have seen the kids performing in game situations, you know, what would you say, where do you feel you stand as you head into the spring, and what excites you about the upcoming season?
Well, I think overall, like when you ask where we stand, you know, I think that this game is so mental, and we've worked really hard this fall on our mental game because I felt like that was an area we really needed to get better at. You know, I think that you do the physical work, and sometimes I told the kids this, sometimes the answer is not to work harder, it's to work smarter. We're a very blue-collar program, and when we're recruiting, we're bringing in kids that work hard. I mean, our kids get after it. I think there's sometimes, you know, you get those overachievers, and there's sometimes they're trying to do too much. And so I think sometimes it's just it's you got to kind of hit the reset button and kind of say, okay, like instead of us, we got to do more, we're already doing enough. Now it's time to be a little bit smarter about how we're doing it. So we've worked on the mental part of it. You know, I think that's been a big component of it. And you got to cut me right there if you want to make it.
And, you know, what excites you about the spring and the upcoming season?
Okay. So I think that, like, for me, I've always – the formula to me has always been, if you want to have success on the softball field, dominant pitching, timely hitting, fundamental defense, intelligent base running, and mental toughness. And so – you know, I think when you can check off those boxes, then you give yourself a chance to win a lot of games and have a special season. I think we have each one of those areas. You know, I feel like our pitching staff is going to be where it needs to be by the time we get to February. You know, I feel like we've put a big emphasis on our base running this year, and we've gotten a lot better at that part of it. Fundamentally, from a defensive standpoint, I feel like our kids are doing what they need, and by the time we get to February, we'll be in a good position. You know, I think with the timely hitting, we've added more power. We've added some sticks to our lineup. Having some kids back that were injured last year, getting them back in the lineup, I think is going to be huge for us. People don't realize really how many people we had out of our lineup last year because of injury. And so getting those kids back and getting them healthy is going to be a major factor for us. And then obviously the mental toughness part. I see us taking steps forward in that, and we got to continue to get better with that. But I think for me, just overall, I can kind of see those five components coming together. And I think that, you know, when they do, I think this is going to be a team that has a chance to compete again at a high level.
Well, that is a very good summary of a lot of what your program has done during the fall season and how you approach it, and I appreciate that. And what I'd like to do now, Coach, is kind of go back to your start in the sport. And, you know, when did you start playing softball as a kid? Were you interested in any other sports? Just wanted to talk about your beginnings.
Yeah, it's let me tell you, it's a very exciting story now. You know, for me, I started playing when I was in the sixth grade. It's so funny now because our state is full of club softball, and you can pretty much find a travel softball team on every corner. When I was coming through, there was no such thing as ASA club softball. It was all in the parks, and it's not that I'm ancient. It's just that that's at that time, that's how far our sport has come in a short period of time. You know, I didn't play actually travel or club softball until the summer after my freshman year of college. So, but the kicker to that is, since there wasn't the travel, the park ball was really, really good. So, I actually went up to Birmingham and played up there, and we were a state championship caliber team. Went to World Series, all that good stuff. It's funny because I look now at people that I played with on those teams, Van Studeman, who's the head coach at Mississippi State now, Les Studeman, who's the head coach at UAH, a Hall of Fame coach, and Marla Townsend, who's the head coach at UAB. You had a lot of talent back then playing in that environment, in that arena. So probably about the sixth grade was when I got started. I changed schools, and my friends wanted me to play, and so you know, talked to my parents and got started. It's amazing how God has used the sport in my life, and to look back on, you know, it's funny when you're younger, you don't really know where you're headed, and then you get this age, you kind of look back and you kind of see how things were orchestrated for you. So it's kind of cool to look back and see how what a big impact and what a huge role the sport has played in my life, and how God put things in place in order to allow that to happen.
Were you interested in any other sports as a kid, or, you know, what did you do competition outside?
Well, I have an interesting story because my dad was a horse trainer. So I grew up riding horses and training horses for my dad, and I showed competitively. Man, when I was a kid, all the way up, probably up until I went to college. So we were on the horse show circuit a lot. So did that. That was, you know, my first introduction to competition was in the horse show arena with the horses. And then after that, softball. I played a little bit of basketball. I don't really know if you would call it basketball. It was more tackle basketball when I played. My nickname was Becky Tech because I was always getting technical fouls. It was just a little too much contact for me. That probably wasn't the sport for me, but I played it for 2 years because I wanted to play a sport for my high school. And our high school played slow pitch softball, and I didn't play slow pitch, so I wanted to play a sport. And so I played 2 years of high school basketball. I was a guard. I was the point guard. And, yeah, it was interesting. I wish we had some video from back then because it would be pretty funny.
Well, I'll make sure to mention that to Coach Fowler in case he needs someone to come in and teach his girls to be a little more physical this winter.
I had no problem with physicality when I played basketball. It was rough.
When did you start thinking about playing softball in college and the possibility of maybe a scholarship being in play?
Yeah, well, it's crazy because now, you know, when we're recruiting, we're looking at seventh and eighth graders. It's, you know, the early recruiting. And for me, I mean, I got to my senior year and I'm like, hey, like, you know, I need to go to college, and where am I going to go and all that good stuff. So things have definitely changed a lot since then. You know, I knew that I was going to have to put myself through college. My mom and dad, amazing people and some of the hardest working people I know, but we just didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have the money to put me through school. So softball and academic scholarships was kind of the key for me to be able to go to college. And So I knew that if I wanted to go and play and all that kind of stuff, I was going to have a scholarship. So my senior year, I emailed coaches and we made this videotape again, which I wish I had that VCR tape now because it would be hilarious. But made my little skills tape and sent it out to some coaches. And, you know, it's so funny because I think back on that process, like my parents didn't go with me. I would, you know, drive myself to the colleges and talk to the coaches. And, you know, I kept doing that till I found somebody that said yes to me. And started out at Troy University my freshman year and on an academic and athletic scholarship, and was there for a year, loved the school, but just felt like it wasn't the fit for me overall. So I transferred to University of Mobile and finished up playing there, and had three great years there, loved it there. And it was actually how I got into coaching, because the head coach at the time, once I graduated, asked me to stay on and be a graduate assistant. And so that was kind of the next step, the next phase for me was really how I got into coaching.
Yeah, actually, that was what I was going to ask you, is when, you know, sometimes it happens during the playing career that you realize you have a love for the sport and want to stay in it moving forward. When you figured out you wanted to be a coach, what steps did you take to kind of get yourself into the field and get those first jobs?
Well, I think, again, I have a kind of a unique story because when I was in college, I was thinking either advertising or law school. I was an English major with a marketing minor. Really wasn't thinking about coaching. In fact, it had never entered my mind. You know, it was a little bit different back then, too, because, like, our sport now is on TV all the time on ESPN. It didn't have the visibility back then that it has now. And, you know, for me coming through, there was only at the time one Division I school in the state of Alabama, and that was Samford University. So it just wasn't as visible. So to kind of think coaching and all that, like it hadn't dawned on me at that point. But I think for me, when my coach asked me to stay on and be a graduate assistant, at the time I really didn't know what else I wanted to do. I was kind of in no man's land, and so I had a chance to get my graduate work paid for. So I agreed to stay on. And even when I finished that, I finished my master's degree. And so I'm still kind of looking, going, okay, what am I going to do now? I still at that point wasn't thinking coaching. And I actually went up to California for a little while and took some classes out there in counseling, biblical counseling. And then came back home, ran out of money, came back home and needed to pay the bills, so there was an assistant job at a junior college, and so I took that. And then the head job at University of Mobile, my alma mater, opened up, and same thing, I needed to pay my bills. And so I remember going to University of Mobile, and I was making a whopping $35,000, and I thought I was rich. That was the most money I'd ever had, and I thought I was rich when I got the assistant job. I was making $20,000 at Okaloosa Walton at the time, and I thought I'd struck it rich. And so then when I went to Mobile and it was 35, I'm like, holy cow, man, this is awesome. You know, so, go to University of Mobile, and I was the head coach there for 3 years. And then, I remember opening up the press register, and it was, South Alabama is going to start a softball program. And, I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, I hope whoever they hire, is somebody cool that, you know, I can work with in the community with the sport, with softball, and we can, you know, help the kids in the community and all that kind of stuff. So it was really funny when, at the time it was Pam Young, who was our SWA, and, she started calling me and wanting to know if I wanted to apply. And, to be honest with you, I'd never thought about it. We had a really good team at the University of Mobile, and my goal over there was to win a national championship. And my first year as the head coach, we'd gotten in the championship game, and we lost to a team out of Canada named Simon Fraser. We lost 3-1. And then my 2 years after that, we finished fourth both years after that. And so that year, I had kind of put together the best team we had ever had there, and had really good pitching, had a lot of hitting, and had worked really, really hard to put that team together. And so when Sal started calling, I was like, man, I don't know. I mean, it was late in the summer. I don't know if you know the history of the program, but they announced it like in July that they were starting the program. And so this was like in August that they were calling me, wanting me to apply. And I just remember, like, at that time, I'm like, holy cow, like, you know, this wasn't on my radar. This wasn't what I was planning. And you know, I remember calling my dad and asking my dad for advice and saying, you know, what do you think I should do? And he told me, he's like, you should at least go talk to him. You know, he's like, that's not you saying yes or you saying no, but at least go, you know, talk to him and kind of see what they have to say and see what you feel about it and how you think about it. So I did. I interviewed, I think it was on a Monday, and they offered me the job that afternoon. And I'm like, holy cow, thanks a lot, Dad. Like, now I've got this major decision to make, you know. And they wanted a decision on Friday. And, you know, I remember going home and I was just so torn because to leave the kids that I'd worked so hard, you know, to help get to the level we were at University of Mobile. I mean, we were a top three, top five team in the nation. And, you know, to think about leaving those kids and leaving that program that I'd put so much into and then coming over here to start something new. I had, at that point, hadn't played Division One and had never coached Division One. So, you know, it was a pretty big bite of the apple to make that change. And, you know, I honestly, my faith plays a big part in my life. And I went home that week and I just prayed and prayed and prayed about it. And, you know, I tell people that when I went to bed, when I went to sleep on Thursday night, I had no clue. Like, I didn't know. And when I woke up Friday morning, I just knew that it's almost like the door had been shut on Mobile and this is where I was supposed to be. And so I remember calling and telling them, you know, okay, I'll take the job. And, you know, from that moment on, I think that was the first time in my life that I'm like, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I'm coaching for the rest of my life. And, you know, I think going back to the faith part of it, that's where I'm so thankful. Sometimes God knows a lot more about what we need than we do because, you know, I remember through that whole process, I'm like, oh, I just don't know about this, if this is what I'm looking for right now. And then from the moment I said yes, you know, there was just a piece about that's exactly where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing. And I've been blessed to be here ever since and known every day, even on the tough days, that this is where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing.
So you know, you played at Mobile and you had 3 years head coaching experience and then you come over here. How did you put together a plan of, okay, I got to start this from scratch because you hadn't done that prior. So that's a new experience. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I think I was very naive, which was a good thing at the time because I don't think I understood what I was getting myself into. but it was, you know, it was a good thing. I mean, I've just been raised to be, you figure things out, you know. My parents were those type of people that if there was a problem or an issue or whatever, I remember my dad would just tell me, Bex, you know, stand back from it, look at it, and there's always an answer. You just got to slow down long enough and figure it out. So, you know, when I took the job here, it was kind of like being pushed into the deep end of the swimming pool and learning how to swim. But, you know, I'm just so thankful for the background that my parents gave me because, number one, just the work ethic that I got from them, and then just the problem solving, you know, being able to look at something and figure things out. Like, I think my parents get a lot of credit for the success that we've had because of what they invested in me. Because of what they've invested in me. And so we just try to take that same approach with our kids, you know, trying to teach them the work ethic, trying to teach them to be problem solvers, trying to teach them to stand on their own two feet and to think for themselves. You know, I think that's one of the biggest advantages you can give somebody in life is to help them work through all that. So really blessed to have a mom and dad who cared enough about me to do that for me. And so that's pretty much what our program's been built on, trying to help these kids figure things out because we care about them and we want them to be successful.
So your experience beforehand, you'd played at Mobile and you had 3 years head coaching experience, but had a program that was established, and then you come over to South, and how did you go about putting together a plan to start a program from the ground up?
Yeah, well, like I said, I think that I was a little bit naive at the time. I don't think I really understood what I was getting myself into. But that was a good thing because I wouldn't have had it any other way. You know, it's kind of like getting pushed in the deep end of a swimming pool. You're either going to sink or swim. And, you know, I've always been the type of person that I'm going to do whatever I can to try to figure it out. I think when you're looking at something, you can find a million reasons why it won't work, and your job is to find the one reason why it will work. And that was kind of the philosophy going into starting the whole program was, you know, there was a it was a big task. I mean, it was a big challenge, but, you know, just repetitively and over trying to find ways that find things that would work. And, you know, I think my mom and dad get a lot of credit too, because they taught me such a tremendous work ethic, how to problem solve. You know, I just, my dad's just so big on, he was never going to do things for me. He was going to teach me how to do them myself and how to have my own thought process and how to stand on my own two feet. I can't ever remember my dad jumping in and like solving a problem for me. I always remember him like teaching me how to stand back and look at something and figure it out. And so I think like starting the program with all the obstacles that we had, it was just a matter of problem solving. I mean, it's putting together a big puzzle. I tell people that when we started the program, it's like dumping a 1,000-piece puzzle out on the table. And, you know, I just felt like my job every day was to come in and make another piece fit. And, you know, I think if you keep doing that, then over time, then you start to kind of see what the picture looks like. And so very thankful to my mom and dad for what they passed on to me. And then I think that's one of the things our program is built on. We try to pass that on to our kids. You know, I'm a tough coach, and I have high expectations for our kids, but at the same time, like, we really try to help teach them to think for themselves and how to make those decisions for themselves and how not to, you know, wait for somebody else to do that for them, because we care about them and we want them, when they come out on the other side of our program, to be able to get out in the real world and be able to take care of themselves and problem solve and figure things out. And, you know, when they get pushed in the deep end, not to sink to the bottom. So, you know, I think that was a big piece of it. I mean, I'm a huge believer in, you have to have a core group of kids who are doing things the right way and who are pushing your program in the right direction. And, you know, we've had so many amazing young ladies go through our program with tremendous work ethics and leadership, and that really, really cared about the program and still care about the program. That I think that's been one of the biggest keys to our success. When you look at the level that we've been able to compete at in such a short period of time, I think so much of that credit goes back to the young ladies wearing our uniform, because they came in, they did things the right way. You know, they put up with me for 4 years. And, you know, I think that just over time, them doing things the right way and working hard and putting the program first, over time, like, you're going to get the results that we've gotten.
You know, on a day-to-day basis, what would you consider your favorite part of the job?
My favorite part of the job, that's easy. you know, I think we're in such a unique situation as coaches, because we get to be front and center at two, in my opinion, two of the most pivotal times in a young lady's life. And that's when they're leaving the structure of mom and dad and the familiarity of mom and dad and home and high school and all that. And they're taking on something new and a new challenge. And then also when they leave the structure of college and college athletics and they go out into the real world, as coaches, we're front and center for both of those times in their life. And so I would say for me, helping them navigate those changes. And, you know, I think I love coaching for two reasons. I love a challenge, and I love helping people get from point A to point B. And so, you know, they come in, they're at point A, they're at this place in their life where they've done things up to that point, but they don't really truly fully understand what they're capable of. And so that whole, like, pushing them out of their comfort zone and helping them navigate that part of it, because I think there's an art to that. Sometimes they don't always understand what you're trying to do. You know, sometimes you're pushing them out of that comfort zone and you have to do it in a way that you get their attention. And so sometimes that's not warm and fuzzy. But at the same time, like, seeing them make that decision and seeing them do that and take that step forward, I think is one of the coolest things in the world. Because, you know, once they do that and they take that upon themselves, like, they'll never go back to the other way. They'll always have that for the rest of their lives. And so I think, you know, I'll get a text from a kid, and, or I'll get you know, an email or a card or something like that just says, you know, one of my favorite texts is a young lady that graduated from here, one of our first signees, Carolina Mendoza. And, you know, I get a text from her, and she's just like, "Coach, I just want you to know everything that I do in my business now," and she's very successful at what she's doing. "Everything that I do is everything that I took from what you taught me, you know, while I was there for you." And, you know, Carolina and I had our ups and downs. I mean, there was times that I was very hard on her and really went after her. but she also responded, and she also, and she'll come back and tell me those were some of the hardest conversations, but they were also some of the best conversations. And thank you so much for caring enough about me to push me, you know, out of that and push me into a better place. And so that's 100% the, I mean, that's why we do this, like trying to help people take steps forward and, trying to help them figure out things about themselves that otherwise they wouldn't be able to figure out.
You know, as you look back, you know, the litany of accomplishments since you've been here, 347 wins, 4 NCAA regionals, 3 Sun Belt tournament titles. When you look back at it all, you have a favorite moment, a favorite accomplishment? What stands out to you from what your program has done since its inception?
Well, that's a great, that is a great question. You know, that 2012 championship down in Boca, I think was really, really special. You know, Lafayette at that point, I think, had won 11 conference tournaments straight, and they were the hands-down favorite in our conference. And to see those kids step up, you know, step up to the plate and, like, not be intimidated and believe that they could do something and I don't know, that was a cool moment. That was a cool moment when, you know, David kind of stood up to Goliath. And, you know, I respect what they do, what UIL does, and people don't understand how hard it is to do that over and over and over again. So they are a very, very good program. And, you know, Mike and I always talk about we make each other better. My program makes him better. His program makes us better because we know if we want to win, then we're going to have to go through each other to get there. And, you know, I just think that moment was so cool for our kids and so cool for our program because it was kind of like that was the first time it was like, wait, we can do this. Like, this is possible. And I think it's – you can't underestimate that moment because up until that point, everybody's trying to figure out, like, what's possible. And I think that group of kids kind of showed everyone that was to come – this is what's possible. At the time, UIL's offense was the number one offense in the nation. And I'll never forget Hannah. I think it was her sophomore year. It was the first time we'd ever played on TV. We were playing Lafayette, who was by far the favorite. And, you know, her sophomore year, and they're the number one offense in the nation. They were really, really good then. And I just remember, like, I went into that game, and my sole focus was just trying to help Hannah. Like, I knew that was a big challenge for her, and so just trying to keep her calm and keep her relaxed and keep her focused. And, you know, after that, I don't know that I really had anything else to do with the outcome of that game. I mean, to be honest with you, after that, it was the kids just getting the job done. And so I would say that was probably by far that was a cool moment.
You know, as you look moving forward, and not just into the spring season but beyond – you have any kind of long-term goals that you've established in your mind that you want to get this program to do or any accomplishments that you want to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when we started the program, like my goal from the beginning has been a College World Series and to win a College World Series. I think that if you're in this business and that's not your goal, then, you know, I think you should do something else. That should be the ultimate goal. So I think when we look long term, yes, 100%. Like we put in the work that we put in and do what we do with the goal of winning a College World Series. One of my first days on the job, I remember sitting down and writing out as a new program reasons why people would say that wasn't possible for us, and then I went about to disprove every single one of those reasons. You know, well, this isn't true. This isn't true. This is, you know, and I think that you have to have that mindset. If you don't have that mindset, then, I mean, as a coach, like, I don't know how you look at your kids if that's not what you're trying to do and trying to help them get there. Other than that, I think that winning is a byproduct. And so it's a byproduct of all the little things that you do on a consistent and a daily basis. So once I get past that part of it, it's more just trying to take care of every single day. You know, sometimes when kids are having a rough day out there and they're trying to do too much, you know, I'll look at the Mitchell Center and I'll say, how was the Mitchell Center built? You know, and they'll say, ma'am, like, how was the Mitchell Center built? How'd they build it? One brick at a time. I'm like, exactly, brick by brick. So I think that's kind of like my thought process is my job every day when I come to work is to to lay another brick, and to lay it straight, and to do it in such a way that tomorrow when I put the next one in, that it'll all line up correctly. And I think when you do that, you know, all of this is a body of work. I mean, as a coach, you have a body of work. And I think just as a human being, your life is your body of work. And so I think just every day, just trying to come in and win that day, like whatever, I always say, like, success is taking whatever you're given on that day and doing the best you can with it. And so every day coming in and just trying to win the day, like whatever I have on that day, like I want to be exceptional at it. I want to be good at it. I want to do it well. I want to do it to the best of my ability. And I know if I keep doing that, then over time that body of work is going to pile up.
We're visiting with head softball coach Becky Clark for this week's episode of Inside Jag Nation. Coach, we've appreciated the time. You've given us more than we could have asked for. But to head on out, let you imagine it's the bottom of the seventh inning. You got to get three outs to secure the win. You got to have some quick pitches that get over the plate in the right spot. So I'm going to ask you a few personal questions. First thought that comes to mind.
Okay.
I know you don't have a lot of time. We've talked about what you put into the program. But in your free time, what do you like to do best?
Fish. So if I have time on my boat, which I never do, but when I get free time, I love to be on my boat.
What's your favorite sport outside of softball?
Ooh, I love professional baseball. I watch a lot of MLB and college football.
What's the best sporting event you've ever attended as a fan?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. Sorry, I'm coming up blank on that one. I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, that's horrible.
Well, it's not often I get a chance to stump someone, so I'm going to run with it. You don't got to worry about it. But I will say this, though. Knowing, you know, obviously you're filtering through a lot of different places that you've been, but if you got a bucket list, what's a sporting event that you've never been to that you want to make sure you get to in the future?
You know, I would love to go to the Kentucky Derby with my dad's in the horse business and that background. I think that would be really cool. You know, I just love professional baseball too. So when I get a chance, try to go to different games. When we're on the road recruiting, if we have an off day or have a chance, we try to get to some of the games. So some of the coolest stadiums I've been to, maybe that'll help. You know, being able to go see the Giants play in their park, that was a really cool experience. You know, I had a chance one time to be at Boston at Fenway for an All-Star game, and that was pretty cool. Wrigley Field, that is a great venue. So maybe I should go with venues that I've been in that were cool instead of the actual game, because just to be able to be in those venues and just kind of relax and just kind of hang out and for once not have to be the one making decisions and just be able to kind of enjoy it a little bit, like that's the cool part of it.
What's the best vacation you've ever been on?
You know, my best friend and her family had a boat, a really, really, really nice boat. And one year around New Year's, we went down around the Florida Keys. You know, I told you I didn't have a lot of money growing up, but the best thing is I had a friend who had a lot of money. So, you know, every time there was a trip, she got to invite a friend. And so that was always me. And I'll never forget, that was one of the coolest weeks of my life. We went down on their boat and it slept about 30. I mean, it was huge. And we just kind of sailed down around the Keys and just kind of hung out. It had, you know, Sea-Doo wave runners on it and all that kind of stuff. So we would lower those in the water and ride around with the dolphins and everything. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty neat experience.
If you've got somewhere that in the coming years, you got one vacation to take, you want to go somewhere you haven't been, where do you want to go?
I'm a Vegas girl, so I can't really, you know, to say somewhere I haven't been. I go to Vegas every year. I'm not really big on leaving the United States. I kind of like being here. I mean, I've traveled abroad, and as much as we travel with recruiting, I just really, when I have some downtime, don't really want to have to be on an airplane for 12 hours. So to go outside of the United States is not really a big goal of mine. I've already kind of done that and seen what I want to see, but I love Vegas. We go to Vegas every year in December, and you know, it's just so different than Alabama, and so it's just fun to go out there for a week. And the National Finals Rodeo is out there. You can tell how country I am. We go out there for the NFR National Finals Rodeo, and we're going again this year. So we already have I'm just telling you how country I am. George Strait tickets, Reba McEntire and Brooks and Dunn tickets. I mean, it's a fun getaway just to go have a good time for a little while.
What's your favorite movie?
Oh, that's a great question. Lampoon. What is it? Christmas Vacation. I probably know every word of that movie. Chevy Chase, and I mean, there's just so many great one-liners in there. I would probably have to say that one.
And what's the favorite book you've ever read?
That one's easy. I'm an English major, so I have To Kill a Mockingbird would be that one. I actually have an autographed copy by Harper Lee. That I got for Christmas one year. Other than that, my faith plays a huge part of my life, so it would be obviously my Bible. And, you know, there's a book I'm reading right now that's actually a great book called Burn Your Goals by Joshua Medcalf that is kind of a book that I'm giving away to a lot of people right now, one that I would highly recommend.
Do you have a favorite musical artist that you listen to?
Well, I know this is going to shock everyone. I listen to a lot of country music, so I'm a George Strait fan. You know, anything that's like country, but not the goofy country, that's like the real country. George Strait, Zac Brown, Reba McEntire, Brooks and Dunn. I'll listen to anything. I can pretty much listen to just about anything, but if you're in my car and my radio's on, it's on one of the country stations.
And final question for you. When they come back here in a few years and someone films the Becky Clark story, what actress plays the starring role?
That's awesome. Man. you got me on that one. Is it Melissa McCarthy? Is that her name? The chick that is so funny. That would be hilarious to see her. That would be funny. I would like to see what she would do with the Becky Clark story. That would be funny. That would be funny.
We've been visiting with head softball coach Becky Clark this week on Inside Jag Nation. Coach, thanks so much for the time, and we look forward to seeing you once you get underway officially in the spring.
Thanks, Brian. Been great. And, you know, I just want to say what an amazing opportunity it is to be at South Alabama. And anyone who's out there listening, hoping they understand what a special school this is and what a special athletic department this is and how many positive things we have going on right now and just how blessed I am to be a part of it. So thank you for taking some time.
Inside Jag Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside Jag Nation every week on USAJaguars.com or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags! Wow!